Good morning and welcome, everyone. My name is Sherry Hills, and I am the Manager of Research at the Ontario Media Development Corporation, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to our first Digital Dialogue Breakfast here in Hamilton. Thanks very much for having us. For those of you who don't know the OMDC, we're an economic development agency of the Government of Ontario, and our mandate is to build Ontario's creative economy, which includes the book, film, interactive digital media, magazine, music, and television industries. OMDC offers a range of financing and tax credit programs, as well as services and industry initiatives such as this networking breakfast. Our research department prepares semi-annual industry profiles and gathers published studies from the creative industries sectors which we serve and puts them on the OMDC website. Many of you from the music sector will be familiar with the Ontario Music Office, which is the largest grant fund at the OMDC, and I'll leave behind some downloads for anybody who'd like to pick them up on the table on your way out. The Digital Dialogue Breakfast series brings together people from the different creative media industries to discuss topics that we think are of interest across the industries. We're hoping that this morning you'll meet some new people or reconnect with people you haven't seen for a while and get some useful takeaways that'll start some new ideas percolating. We're now posting these breakfasts as podcasts, and our podcasts are called OMDC Talks. You can find them on the iTunes or Google Play or on our website. And podcasts from previous breakfasts are also found there. We'll be posting the podcast of this morning's breakfast within the next couple of weeks. And if you're interested in OMDC research, we'll be producing a quarterly research bulletin, which will be emailed to subscribers. You can sign up for that on the subscribe page on our website, as well as other sectors if you're not already receiving news about funding deadlines and applications. Many thanks to our promotional partners who helped get the word out today from the City of Hamilton, Cobalt Connects, and also at Mohawk College. Please join me now in welcoming Debbie Spence from the City of Hamilton, who'd like to say a few words. Thanks, Debbie.
So good morning, everyone. It's really great to see all of you out here this morning, and really great to have the province in Hamilton. So on behalf of the city, it's my pleasure to bring greetings. It's important, too, to recognize and acknowledge that we're located on traditional territories of the Mississauga and Haudenosaunee Nations, with the lands protected by Dish With One Spoon Wampum Agreement. So this event is really excellent in terms of its support for local businesses because it's critical to our growth as a city. And the city acknowledges the importance of creative industries economically, culturally, and socially. I'd like to extend the city's thank you to the OMDC, the organizers, and the panelists for today's really important and thoughtful approach to creating a dialogue about better practices and company development for creative industries. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Debbie. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Jeremy Freiberger from Cobalt Connects.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jeremy. I'm from Cobalt Connects. We're an art service organization here in Hamilton. We've been around for 15 years this summer. Woo-hoo. Some of you may know us. We develop a lot of spaces in the city, so places like 270 Sherman or the Paper Box Factory. We're now working on the Westdale Theater and the Music Hall. And we work on creative industries strategies in cities all over Ontario, so we love the research side of things. So thrilled that OMDC is here and just extending an invite to use us in whatever way you would like to. As this sector grows and as your needs need to be met in the community, we're here to help make that happen. So feel free to reach out at any point. Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you. All right. So now, just quickly, I'd like to move to the topic, which is exploring best practices in company development. Creative industry businesses in Ontario are successfully creating, marketing, and selling content, and our panel will discuss company development and strategies for growth. Panelists will also discuss their experiences and share some best practices. For those who picked it up, we added a couple of resources on the back of that networking sheet if you'd like to explore these ideas further. And we're also pleased to have Vish Khanna, host and producer of Creative Control with Vish Khanna, here to moderate our panel today. Our industry panelists are sorry, got them all here. Jennifer Burkett, founder and creative director of Log Cabin Productions. Juan Lopez, president and co-founder of Pipeline Studios. And Jeff Kulowick, president, True North Records and Linus Entertainment. And I'll leave them to Vish to introduce them properly in a moment. And finally, before I turn it over to the moderator, I want to tell you how extremely important your feedback is to OMDC. Many of you may have participated in the survey that went out last year about client satisfaction for the OMDC. All feedback helps us shape our programs and be sure that we're responsive to industry issues. A short feedback questionnaire will be emailed to you after this session, and we would appreciate it if you'd fill it out and let us know. It helps us with our planning for next year. Okay, and now to our moderator. Vish is based in Guelph, Ontario, and has played in several bands and is an assistant editor at Exclaim magazine, where he currently oversees the comedy section. He was a host and producer at CBC Radio 3 and is an on-air columnist for CBC Radio 1 program, The Next Chapter with Sheila Rogers. He writes a monthly arts column for the Guelph Mercury Tribune. His written work has also been featured in Pitchfork, Now, the AV Club, the Globe and Mail, Spinner, Huffington Post, Signal to Noise, O, iWeekly, Chart Attack, Off the Shelf, and many more. He began organizing and promoting concerts in Guelph in 1997 and continues to do so sporadically, including December's annual Stay Out of the Mall mini festival. So a man for everything. Please join me in welcoming Vish Khanna.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. It's weird to hear your whole life's work presented to you so early in the morning. It almost felt like a eulogy. Anyway, it's nice to be back at the Spice Factory. The last time I was here, I was actually playing in a wedding band. So I have a good feeling about us. I think things are going to work out really well. And also, I should say, my son, before I left Guelph today, I told him I was going to Hamilton, and he said, "Can you pick up some granddad's donuts for me?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess so." So they are actually here. They're over there at the table. So if you haven't had a granddad's donut, free plug for them. They're delicious donuts. I really like them. So anyway, it's nice to be here, and I thank everyone for asking me to be here. Thank you for being here. I'd like to begin by asking each of our panelists to introduce themselves and their affiliation and maybe even their place of residence so we can get to know each of them a little bit, and I'll have a little conversation with them as well, and we'll go from there. So let's begin right here. Please introduce yourself.
Okay, so I'm Jennifer, and I have my own company, Log Cabin Productions. Before opening Log Cabin, I had worked for many years in the media industry, focusing more on the digital side of things, game development, app development, that sort of thing. So I started early on at the Canadian Film Centre, where I was manager of programs there. Worked with all sorts of companies in between, and worked with PBS and Cinar, companies like that, and then went to, like as a producer, and then I went to TVO. I headed up the TVOKids.com team there for a number of years, and then
I love TVO Kids, by the way.
TVO Kids is really
it's great. My donut-eating son has been on that channel. They put him on the Skype, and he answered questions. It's great.
Because they have live programming, it's nice the way they combine.
Absolutely.
You know, they're
interactive.
Very interactive. And then from there, I was the executive in charge of interactive at Kids CBC. So I was at CBC for a long time.
A lot of kids programming.
A lot of kids programming, yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, then left there. I live in Hamilton, and I didn't, I have two kids myself, and I didn't want to continue commuting, so and since then it's been great, an interesting 4 years doing my own thing and working in the same sort of realm. So
now you've called your company Log Cabin Productions. Does anyone ever think that you can make them a cottage
Once in a while, yes.
Do you get a call being like, "I need some work done"? Why is it called Log Cabin Productions? I'm
just
curious.
That's funny. Because
has no one ever asked you about the name?
They have. And it's an easy answer. I have a log cabin on Lake Huron.
Oh, okay.
Just south of Bayfield. So I'd always imagined spending, you know, a lot of work time at the cabin, which doesn't happen. But that was the plan. So
okay, that explains that. So you What exactly do you do at this company? You mentioned your background in terms of some of the kids programming. What are some of the things that Log Cabin Productions might be behind that we would be familiar with?
Yeah, well, we've done work for a number of different broadcasters and production companies as well. So I kind of came in and worked on a strategy perspective. So we'll do like things, bigger things and smaller things for Knowledge Network in BC. So revised all of their digital planning. So they kind of didn't have a large digital footprint. So I knew them from my time at CBC, and mm-hmm. They needed to launch an app and sort of figure out what would that look like. So we built a video app for them that we got great reviews for. We were told it was better than Netflix for kids, so I was pleased with that.
That's great.
And then just their site, and sort of gave them a plan that would allow them to internally continue to build,
yeah.
And take care of their own digital content. An Atomic Cartoon in BC, and then we started to do more work in the museum space. I really think that experiential design is a nice way of sort of leading people through a space in a gaming format. So it really is very similar to developing content for kids.
I see.
It's educational and fun, like really building the fun into whatever it is, and making sure that people don't feel like, oh, I have to figure out what I'm doing and I'm learning, and really building something interesting. Is what we're all about. And not too long ago, we developed something called the Westbury Ferry, which was a co-production between an Australian company and ourselves. And we did Canada Media Funding and Screen Australia. Did I already say that? Funding? Anyway, we built this really interesting multi-platform world-building experience for teens. And that was it was great to do focus group testing and really figure out, you know, how much kind of excitement and sort of a little bit of scary factor are they willing to participate in. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. We had some great interaction, worked with some really interesting companies on that, on the technology side of things. It was an augmented reality project.
And, wow, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. The kids loved it. When we were in the classroom, the kids said... like, teachers were excited because kids were saying, like, this is the best thing we've done at school ever.
I do want to follow up on this, because I think in this day and age, when companies are like, we need to figure out our digital marketplace, our footprint, I feel in my head like they're implicitly saying, we need to get at younger people who are using these things.
Sure.
So, and it seems like you have a broad background in that, reaching young people with content and mm-hmm. appealing to them. So I do want to get back to you, okay. but I want to introduce the other
yeah.
panelists. But before we do that, how about a hand for Jennifer Burkett, please? Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we move down the table. Please introduce yourself, sir.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Juan Lopez. I am co-founder and president of a media production company called Pipeline Studios. We produce content, family entertainment, kids entertainment, in various formats, everything from script and all the pre-production, all the voice recording, all the storyboarding, all the technical animation, design, right down to compositing, final delivery, and packaging straight to television and film, both for 2D animation, CG animation. We've done some live action stuff. We work with partners in the gaming side of things, all multi-platform, just ways to extend content into any sort of vehicle that there will be audiences. It is a family company. We've been growing it for the past 11 years. Right now, just because of the nature of the industry in Canada is so in demand, Pipeline has become one of the top studios in terms of audience reach. This year, we're second in Canada in how much our content that we produce right here in Hamilton reaches audiences globally. Something in the range of 650-700 million people.
Wow.
With all the platforms that exist nowadays, that if you play it right, you can make this happen, and it's all coming right out of here from talent in Canada, in Hamilton. I live in Burlington. You wanted to say our place of residence.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Hamilton. We came here about 6 years ago now. Most of the industry is in Toronto. It's a very attractive place, especially for this type of creative community. But we ventured here because we thought there was an opportunity, given the new leadership in the city to really support these creative industries, and we wanted to be a part of that. So 6 years in now, we're a bit of a success story in that can happen. And we continue to promote it. We continue to work with the schools. It's very important to us to work with the schools, with the city officials, to design this path and this ecosystem that will nurture the creative industries. So thank you for all the job that you've been doing. It's amazing. And we feed off of that. We sell that quite a bit, not only with the talent, but with our clients who didn't know Hamilton existed. But we bring people from NBC Universal, from Nickelodeon, all the LA, New York, fancy people, and they come to Hamilton, and they love it. They didn't know this was here, and they love the proximity to Niagara. They love the region in general, but they love what the city's doing, and we've sold it really well, and they're happy to be working with us.
That's amazing. That's great. I thought I was asked to moderate this panel because I'm a hip and cool music and culture guy, but it seems like I was asked because I'm a dad. What are the odds that everyone was doing kids programming? So how did you get into kids programming, if I might ask you, Juan? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a good question. It was a family initiative. I mean, it goes back to our immigration story a little bit. My brother, he's the creative person, the creative genius, and we're from Colombia originally, and he really started back when, like, computer animation was starting to happen, you know, and back in the late 80s, things like that. Mid-90s, he went to an art school in Bogota, Colombia, nothing on the map of this industry, but he bought the Maya book, and he learned it for himself, and he started teaching the teachers, you know, and this was a no-place school, that no name, really, but Colombia was going through all this aggressive turmoil, so we had to leave, and we chose a place on Earth to go. And at that time, my brother, he was already starting his career. So my father said, you know, we sold everything. We heard about Sheridan College in Oakville.
Right.
And we kind of put our investment in that. And obviously, coming to Canada, safe, secure, the right place to be, the you want to grow up. I was still in high school. But anyways, he went to Sheridan, got a job at Nelvana, at Chorus Entertainment, which is the number one producer globally in terms of output per year. Not a lot of people know that. He got a job there as an animator, quickly grew, became the VP of operations very quickly, within 10 years. By that time, I graduated university. My background's in economics, finance, all the business side of things. And I went off to work in my own industry, you know, in finance and banking. I actually ended up with a software developer on their managing director side and in the Caribbean. So I was living an interesting life.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, your life seems better than mine. Eating donuts. Anyway, it's quite amazing. That's a remarkable trajectory.
And my brother called me up and said, Juan, there's an opportunity here in Canada. There's just so much work coming in. And his job as the VP of operations at Nelvana was to be able to take on this work, develop the financial plans, get the right funding, build the right teams, the whole logistics of it. And it's a massive production process. And the studios at the time were specializing a little too much. So he had to work with 8 different studios to get one show done. So he said, I think there's an opportunity here to have like a turnkey solution that will really support the industry. So we came up with a proposal. We actually teamed up with Sheridan College. We came back to Sheridan College, teamed up with them. They helped us kind of design this, tap into talent, tap into the whole technical rendering aspect of it. And I said that's a brilliant, genius proposal. And I left the island. I came back here. And that's we hit off since that. So my sister's involved as well, with a key component with the production side, on the HR side, on the culture side. It's key. It's been key to our success. And my father, who was an economic officer at the Ministry of Economic Development and Trade, he was doing great here in Canada. He was leading these international trade missions for Canadian companies. We took him out of that as we started to expand internationally to guide us with the international expansion. So it's a full-on family business.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible story. Well, like I say, we'll get to more with you in a moment as we speak to the whole panel, but how about a hand for Juan? That's wow. I mean, you're successful. I think you shouldn't have left the island, frankly. I mean, but welcome to Canada. I don't know. You sound like you've been here a long time. Sorry, that was wrong. let's move down to our final panelist.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff Kulovic. I'm the founder and president of Linus Entertainment. Linus Entertainment is a music company. We are in the business of monetizing the music experience, and that takes many forms. Our primary business is as an independent label. So we're in the intellectual property business. We own, license, or distribute about 2,500 albums or 25,000 sound recording tracks. That's the main component. Our primary revenue is the sound recording business, but we're also in music publishing. We're licensing music. We're in the live entertainment space. Anything that can monetize the music experience, we have some form of interest in. The only exception to that would be we're not artist managers or booking agents. We don't get involved in that end of the business. And the reason for that is so that we can engage with those managers without any sense of competition. So we like working with strong artist managers to build a team around an artist and record, market, distribute their recordings globally. We're one of the few independent labels that actually control the global distribution. We have physical partners in every major English-speaking territory for physical, and we have direct relationships with all of the major digital platforms, whether it be Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, and the like. So I think we're the leading exporter of Canadian artists and Canadian sound recordings in terms of number of artists and bands. Some of the artists that we distribute or own sound recordings or license are icons of Canadiana, like Bruce Coburn, Buffy St. Marie, Gordon Lightfoot. We have emerging artists as well, Matt Anderson, we do not just folk and roots, but we do children's music, classical music, jazz. I say jazz, yeah. So we're in mostly the niches. We don't get involved in a lot of pop or rock or hip hop or anything that requires, you know, commercial radio airplay and big budget videos and the like. We find it very difficult to compete in that area with multinational music companies that have a lot more influence with big media. So we deal in the niches, but we are heavily invested in international marketing, and we love what we do.
Thank you, Jeff. So, Jeff, were you a founder of this company?
I was founder of Linus Entertainment in 2000, so 18 years ago. I used to work for the multinationals. I used to be the artist and repertoire, which is A&R for creative development for Virgin Records Canada, EMI Music Canada, Warner Chappell Publishing. So I came from working for the big guys to working against them.
So working with the big guys, what did you learn? You learn things when you work with companies like that, and you try to apply things to your own venture. But I'm actually curious what you wanted to avoid doing. You mentioned some of the genres you avoided, but were there things they were doing where you're like, that is just stupid. I'm not going to do that. If I had my own company, I would never do these things. I'm just curious if you can speak to
that. Yeah, well, that was probably the main reason why I left. I was signing artists to Virgin Canada. And, you know, we had some notable successes like Choclair, La Boutine Souriante, Leahy, what we found is that, you know, my job was to sign global deals with artists, and then we would have to make them available to our company outside of Canada, and our companies outside of Canada would, you know, proceed to not do anything with the artist and just release it and not do anything so that we couldn't third party it to another label and embarrass them by having a hit outside of Canada. So I found that very frustrating, and that's one of the reasons why I started taking accounting courses and started to in my spare time and learned to read a balance sheet and speak the financial language for business and managed to raise some money to start Linus Entertainment and exited Virgin EMI, launched the label with just over $1 million in investment capital, started signing artists. The first one was Ron Sexsmith with the album called Blue Boy, and just continued growing the company by signing and developing artists and also acquiring other labels. So we bought True North Records in 2007, the children's group, which produces children's music, Solid Gold Records, and a U.S. company called Spring Hill Music. So we've been growing through acquisition and organic development.
So you took accounting courses when the need arose. What was your background before that? Like, I know you said you worked for those labels. You're a music fan. You got into this because you're a fan, right?
Yep. My education was hanging out at the Horseshoe, drinking, doing drugs, and hanging out with artists.
Now, what kind of drugs did you do?
Well, there's a wide range.
And, okay. Yeah.
But
this is germane. I mean, people here want to learn how to develop. It's right in the title of the company. Anyway,
my kids are not in the room, right?
No. No, despite the panel, I thought we'd only have kids, basically, based on the panel. But yeah, no. So you were a scenester guy. You went out and did stuff, and then realized, hey, I could do this.
Full on rock and roller scenester, but I quickly realized that just being creative and trying to be cool was going to not get me anywhere in terms of having a long-term sustainable career in music, and I needed to have a financial background, so that's why I started taking accounting courses.
It seems to be a common theme, the business side of things, and obviously why we're here. So let's, first of all, how about a hand for Jeff? Jeff, thank you very much for the introduction. So let's open up the floor to the panel. Everyone feel like they know each other a little bit? I feel like, Juan, you're... trajectory is quite interesting because you started out a business guy and then entered an arts realm. And is it fair? I guess, Jen, you mentioned that you started your own company. Like, was it because you found the business side of things frustrating with the companies you were working with and you thought you could do it better on your own?
Well, I'd always worked with a variety of different production companies across the country and, understood how to work with the funds and understood how to help them develop content, and I wanted to, do that on my own.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of developing original content as opposed to just helping shape what was coming in to places like CBC or TVO.
So. I mean, other companies have come and gone, I'm sure. Do you think that at least one of the reasons is that they don't have a business plan per se? I mean, maybe this is obvious, but... some people just end up with a great success out of the gate. Something just takes, and then they're like, oh, no, I got to figure out how to do some accounting because it's just crazy. But do you feel like... I did a panel recently, and it was about a music... it's a music panel, but there was a lawyer on the panel. Mm-hmm. And he said, I actually suggest the first thing a band do is get a lawyer.
Yeah.
And we were all like, what? No, you should learn how to change the strings on your guitar or something. He's like, no, I would get a lawyer first.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just blew everyone's mind. Like, I never would have thought that. I need a lawyer before I need a practice space. You know,
that
what
was
I mean?
A lawyer's idea.
It was a lawyer's idea. I got charged for the advice. I thought that was weird. Do you think enough attention is paid to business practices by startups like yourself?
I really do think it's crucial to understand the business side of things because it's difficult to make things work. And although it's really great to be able to lean on family, because it's nice to be able to trust, that some of the decisions that you're making are well informed. And I happen to have my niece, she's only a few years younger than me, but she's a CA, and another niece who's a lawyer, and I'm a brother that is quite a very large business. And so they've always sort of helped with, advice and chatting and kind of building, and really does make a big difference. It's really, you can't do it just on the creative side alone, for sure. And I think that that's really the only way to grow is to understand how a business
it sounds like the key is to do your artsy fartsy stuff yourself and convince a sibling to go
right.
into business. That seems to be the common thread. Juan, you got into business because I don't mean to exclude you here, because obviously I think Pipeline is now a passion project, right? Like,
yes.
It is definitely coming from the place of passion, but I think Jen and Jeff, my sense is they came at it because they love the creative aspect, but you didn't initially. You came at it from a business point of view. Are you a boring person? Are you not excited? You don't seem boring. Your life is better than mine. I already established that.
That's a good observation. I'm definitely more boring now.
Yeah. Are you more boring than you used to be? Like,
yeah. Now it's a responsibility to make sure. I mean, we have, we range between 180, 130 artists here in Hamilton. Globally, we have another 80 to 100 people. So it's a major responsibility. So in that sense, like, for me to make sure I'm meticulous with the legal stuff, with the accounting stuff, with all the funding, with all the partnerships that we build, all the clients that we decide to go and work with, those are major decisions that affect everybody's lives. So in that sense, yeah, I don't joke around when it comes to that. But I've grown to become very passionate about a world I didn't know anything about, because when you're surrounded with these creative people and how they live their lives and how they put it all on the line constantly, and they're getting judged, and how they deal with judgment and how they deal with processes and adapting, it's inspirational, and you learn a lot from that, for every aspect. So in that sense, I've grown quite a bit in my own personal life and how I manage the corporation. And I mean, I think everybody has some creative juices to them. It's just your upbringing, your experiences in life. Everything can be redesigned to tell a story, right? Mm-hmm. So if you tap into that skill set, it's incredibly powerful. I actually just did an MBA, and I was the only one from the creative sector doing the MBA. And pretty much every single teacher, everybody in the faculty, the deans, everybody was extremely interested in my world, because the world of storytelling has become such a powerful tool for CAs, for anything that you do. The power of storytelling allows you to get ahead in life, and how you design things for your life, for your career, for your path, but also to design businesses, to design concepts, to innovate, to do anything. Storytelling is a powerful tool.
You used a phrase there as you were speaking, that when it comes to the business side of things in your realm, you don't joke around. How much friction is there? You have 180 people working under you. How much friction is there between the business side of things and the creative side of things?
There can be quite a bit. So I learned very early. My brother didn't originally come with me to start up the business. He had to stay back where he was working. He had a big family and all that. But the partner I teamed up with, Mac Holyoke, who has been in the industry for over 30 years, he taught me not to get in the way with that. He came from the corporation side, and where there was policies and committees, and to pitch an idea, it was just so regulated that he saw that the company be destroyed by that, especially a creative company. So
by the friction, you mean?
Yes, because I'll get, like, if somebody wants to pitch an idea, then I have to create a legal environment where that idea that was pitched, you know, the IP is very delicate matter. I might have heard that already before. So people have to release that kind of, that space has to be released to me to hear ideas, for them to be comfortable to hear ideas. So it can get very technical. So I had to design a process where it's seamless. You can share ideas, you can be a part of the process, but I'm not in the way, I'm in the back.
But your job is to sell the idea.
Yes.
So if someone comes to you with an idea that they're in love with, but you don't see its viability, you have the uncomfortable position. And I think everyone here would have that circumstance occur. Like,
right.
That happens from time to time, right?
Yeah, and then the following month, I hear an idea that is somewhat similar.
Yeah.
And that goes and becomes a hit. That person can come back and say, I gave you that idea.
Huh.
So that kind of scenario
is
a little delicate.
Okay. Jeff, do you want to speak to this as well? I mean, you're working with lots of artists as well, creative types. Do you have that tension?
I love working with creative people, and you know, creative people are individuals, and their processes are as individual as they are. So I'll work with an artist who wants lots of input in, you know, terms of selecting songs and producers and, you know, the approach to recording and artwork, and happy to engage with them. And then there's other artists that don't want to have anything to do with record company input. They deliver you a record and you know, that's it, and they don't want your comments. So, and we're just as happy to get those music from those artists, because you know, if it's an artist that we want to engage with, of course. Like, but Yeah, the creative process is a very individual thing, and it requires nurturing and positive energy. And a lot of people, you know, when they're dealing with usually inexperienced managers, I find when they're dealing with creative people, have this urge to, you know, offer criticism or, you know, suggest changes or you know, things like that. And typically that goes over like a lead balloon. You know, the best way to accomplish, you know, if you want to have a work and you think it can be adapted to be more marketable, is to try and just show examples without telling people how to change their work and see if you can't lead people to make the decisions on their own that you're hoping that they will. And sometimes you just have to accept the work as it is and do the best to market it, because forcing the change on an artist is probably just going to result in a less creative artist.
I mean, I think these sort of dynamics have existed for a long, long time. This the creator business owner friction tension. Jen, earlier we were talking about how you got into digital marketing and you're working for different companies, right? Like you started your own company. I remember like maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, a lot of my fellow journalist friends were losing, and myself included, I should say, we were all losing jobs. Media companies were crumbling. And a lot of them ended up with these super high-paying jobs helping established companies enter the like digital realm. Like, I don't do journalism anymore. I just tweet for Enbridge. I'm like, what do you mean you tweet for Enbridge? Like, I just respond to tweets. They don't know how it works. Like, they don't understand. Like, they don't want to bother with it. They don't know if it's a fad. They don't know this stuff, right? So I imagine all of you are dealing to some degree with people who want to infiltrate the marketplace, the digital marketplace, but don't quite know, don't think they know how to do it. I don't even know if they don't know. I just think it's a nebulous world sometimes. Can each of you talk about that, how you've maybe worked with someone, whether you work with people who are like, just do it, I don't know, I don't understand. Yes, I'll do all the cross-platform stuff. Like, are you given these instructions by people these days? Like, just help me. I don't get it. You do the Facebook post, you do all that stuff. I don't get it.
Yeah, I've always worked on the digital side of things and been a part of broadcast. And I've always believed that it really is storytelling. It's just a different format. But yeah, for some reason, I think maybe because television or film and television is so established and there's a specific format that really still is similar. It's the same.
Yeah.
It's like the same output. And I think that one of the most creative elements of being a part of the digital world is just thinking about every single project as a brand new, a brand new way to deliver and create. I think the biggest thing is to help people not feel afraid of it.
Yeah.
Because it's always changing. But I think if you come at it from a perspective of thinking, it's okay, I don't know, who knows what this is going to be, but just having the confidence to say, we'll figure it out and we'll make it work. And I really believe understanding the market, and certainly within the children's space, you know, we're not kids. People producing content for kids, now there's a lot of kids producing content for kids now, which is incredible. But but I mean, on this end of things, like media company-wise, you have to really know and love your audience and just work with them and talk to them. I love to do focus group testing and helping a company come in and see some of that. And when Jeff was talking about helping someone to understand, you know, the way that you're hoping they'll go, I think you have to be open to thinking, I don't even know myself how things are going to go, but together, if I'm there to help you with the journey, we did that with Knowledge Network, for instance. It's just like, so we have to understand exactly what you want to do. Like, what are you hoping? Do you want to have a larger audience? Do you want to move into a new space? Do you want to connect with kids and their parents? Or do you want to just talk to teens or the whole different group? Like, it's just understanding the audience.
It is, like, to the credit of some of these people who say, I don't know what's going on, it is an oversaturated information age. And so often companies will say the wrong thing and they don't know why it's the wrong thing, right. You know, and they'll get in trouble, and or they'll put something out and people will be like, that's tone deaf now. Like, you can't say that. So sort of the same question following up for Juan and Jeff. Can you each speak to that? Like, are you comfortable guiding people that you're working with through this digital realm?
I think there's two sides to that. I mean, there's the one with our clients, for example, from the US or wherever. They come to us and they have this dream, this vision of what this content can be, but it's completely up to us to design the production pipeline, bring the right people for it. So that we're used to that. Once we understood that dynamic, we made it an advantage to us, and we secured it, we standardized it. Don't you worry, we'll solve these issues for you 100%. So that's made our industry in Canada as a whole much stronger. That is our responsibility now. The world sees us as the top industry in terms of animation for television and film. More television, but both industries and gaming and everything is becoming extremely powerful because we saw it that way. We chose to see it that way. So when you make these decisions on how you approach these challenges, you start building this intuition on business. You start building on the right decisions, and you start surrounding yourself by the right people. So that's the other side of it. In terms of the people you work with, you want people that are up for that challenge of taking a generalized concept and finding a way to do it, you know, figuring it out. It is data overload. It is an amazing amount of analysis required nowadays. But with the right attitude, with the right approach, you bring it on. You go as far as your intuition allows you to kind of frame it, but you bring people that are willing to connect the dots with you. Right. So that's how we've been approaching it.
Okay, appreciate that. And Jeff, can you speak to the same question?
Well, I don't know, like, a lot of these digital platforms and the nuances of them. I rely on people on my team to learn them, and, you know, I give them the instructions of very simply, you know, is this platform something that can give our artists more impressions? So the way we have business come in is by getting people familiar with our artists' music, and that happens through impressions, and however we can get the impressions of that music is how you know, we're going to be able to monetize, make money, and develop the artists. And I rely on people to learn these platforms and my staff. And I encourage them not to get trapped into, you know, too much analytics, right? Like, there's so many people offering so many ways to slice, dice, and present information that you just it's like a rabbit hole that you can't get out of, and actually, you know, come up with creative ideas to do interesting things with your business. So I have a sort of cautionary tale about all these, social media, Google AdWords and Facebook ways that really try and complicate your experience and how to get impressions by making you spend more time on their platform and then sending more of your community into their platform, which is great for their business, but not necessarily good for yours. So as long as we have an objective and take time to be creative and don't get too buried in the technical nuances. As a manager, that's how I approach it.
Jeff, I couldn't help but notice that you sounded scared talking about computers. Are you okay? You just sounded a little like, I don't know. I just tell people to do it. I go to my office. That's it. Like, I just say, are you okay? Are you all right? I know you had a hard partying life there. Are you rattled? Are you going to be okay?
I'm going to be fine.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for answering my questions, and it flew by. We want to open the floor to questions from the audience. So if you have questions from the audience, we have mics on either side there. Does anyone have, can anyone raise your hand if you have a question at this moment? Are there no questions? Okay, go ahead. So if you want to form a line, never mind. A mic is coming. I don't even know what's going on. All hopped up on donuts.
I have a lot.
You have a loud voice. Well, good for you, sir. Thanks
Hello?
For showing
hey,
off.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
My name's Trevor. We're from Sneak. I'm actually brand new to the company, 3 weeks in. I'm a retired builder in the area. My main question is, as an individual, I'm making a transition to the industry. in my experience, I'm a very creative person because I have clients that come to me and they want the most radical custom things built. My answer to them is always, if you can think about it, I can build it. And what I've learned from this panel is it's the same idea. Is that what I'm getting?
It's the same idea, did you say?
Yeah. If a client comes to you and they want to do this, your answer is always, if you can think of it, I can do it. That's the challenge you guys are always faced with, right?
Well, I don't know exactly what context, but I mean, having that creative capacity is obviously a huge asset. You're new to this corporation, you still have to absorb that culture and how they deal with clients, and there's a lot of elements to that. So, and just in terms of approach, you may be very eager to present this amazing creative functional proposal, but you also have to walk delicately. You know, there's a lot of elements to the corporation which you may not be aware of, right? So
right, absolutely. And I'm learning this as I'm going along. So my main question is, all I've been focusing on right now are people and their needs. Where the technical aspects come in, I leave that to my creative director, and he'll handle that part. Once we have our proposal in place, then my main focus is, you know, closing the deal and continuing that relationship for life. Like, that's the end goal, because, you know, we're after our referrals and our word of mouth process and so on and so forth. My concern now is I have a lot of faith and belief in this business, and I'm really excited to be part of this. This meeting has really inspired me. I've learned a lot. And what I want to know is, because you guys are all big, how does this affect your personal life? How much time do you have for your family? No, it's really important to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a rough childhood, and my family, I work for my family, not before them. And I want to know how you guys feel about your time given to your family, because I want what you have, but not at the expense of time.
Well, I would say I feel like it's very important to have time for your family. One of the reasons that I wanted to open my own business here in Hamilton is because I have two kids, and I'm building content for kids, and I love my own children. And I also felt like, especially being in the kids' space, it was really wonderful to be more a part of just their everyday along with their friends. And you really do learn a ton from being immersed in the audience that you're building for. So to answer that, yeah, I felt that it was really important to be more present for my kids, and commuting in and out of Toronto takes a lot of time out of your day. It's interesting now, my oldest is actually in high school, and I think it's even more important. You think, oh, well, they're bigger now. I don't have to go on play dates. but at the same time, you know, all sorts of things happen.
It just gets worse and worse. they get bigger and bigger, and you're like, oh, this is going to be easy. And you're like, no, it's just worse.
No, it's harder.
It's worse and worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Problem
children.
Is, yeah. My kids don't have
them. I would not have children. No, I like
my kids are teenagers, and they don't have time for me now. So
right, it goes the other way. It's true.
I would say though, I my daughter's, as I said, in high school, and I coach her basketball, and so getting to hang out with the girls at that, at that age, you kind of have to immerse yourself into a position like that so that, you know, she rolls her eyes at me and goes, oh, Mom, please don't do this or that. But it's been great to be so much a part of their life.
I can say for myself, like, I turn down jobs sometimes, or I don't apply for things. I'm home. Luckily, I have, my day job is flexible enough that I can be back to pick up my kid at his bus stop at 3:30, and I go get my daughter at her daycare before she starts school next year, and I make dinner, and it's great. And then I put them hopefully to sleep. They're not being terrorists or whatever they are. And then I work until I get back to work. I work or I hang out with my wife from 8 to midnight. And then, yeah, it's a lot of work doing this kind of stuff, I think. And I'm sure I'm not alone here. And Juan, I think you wanted to speak to this a little bit, or?
Yeah, I just said set some targets for yourself. You know, there's going to be the first maybe
3 to 5 years to build that for yourself. That's the, I think the same way. And once you think that way, you can just, we're in a country where you can take, there's so much opportunity here. You can really design that for your life, but you're gonna have to work for it at first.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously, right? And then you can definitely have that. At first it's tough, and you gotta see if this company is growing, because you're committing to that company too, obviously. It's not just them paying you and they're doing everything for you. No, you're actually valuable to them. So you gotta performance review them as well. Make sure they're aligning with that growth and you're getting to that point. And you can make that happen for sure. Well,
what are your snow tires like in the Caribbean? I'm just curious. I don't know. Stupid joke. Sorry. Go ahead, Juan.
I worked in economies where there are no opportunities, you know, and I have this passion for economics and how these systems are supposed to help society grow and economic development and all that. So seeing the malfunction in places like the Caribbean and Colombia and places like that is very stressful. You know, one trip to the bank, if you have to go from the office to your bank, will take you the entire day, done. How do people function like that? And then the laws that are in place because of corruption and anti-laundering, you can't move, you can't be flexible. So coming to Canada is a dream. It's a huge privilege.
Yeah. Okay, we do need to move on. We have a question over here.
Hi, just a quick question. You guys are all coming from industries that have faced a lot of disruption, from games, from television to music. It's not stopping, so the disruptions keeps going on. There's not really a stable footing, as you know, the economic mechanics that run those industries are changing. The distribution channels that are in each of these industries is changing. How do you deal with that kind of 5-year, 10-year kind of disruptive universe that you live in, and how do you keep sane and pull out of court?
Go ahead, Jeff.
So, to answer your question and to talk a little bit about, you know, how to build a company, like innovation and exploring new ideas, these are the ways to make it through disruption, and also, you know, discover what the possibilities are and where the opportunities are. So, you know, going through the whole distribution change for music, we've done a whole bunch of things that didn't work, but we tried them, you know, and then some things that we did try actually worked. So we were very early on playlisting and building, genre-based playlists on YouTube and Spotify, and aggressively marketing lifestyle instead of, you know, unfamiliar artists. And now we've built huge communities of followers on these platforms, and it was because we tried something and it worked. But you know, there was a lot of failures along the way. Just to add to that is to try and build in your work environment like a something, you know, a creative space. So, you know, our building in Waterdown, we had some available space. We were thinking about, you know, maybe opening it up to like a creative hub kind of thing with, you know, designers and editors and programmers. And we discarded that when my wife, you know, had an idea to open up an art gallery for visual art by musicians. And we explored the idea. We found out there was so many musicians that created visual art as well as music, that we opened what is now the world's first gallery dedicated to visual art by musicians. So I'd like to, you know, plug it, you know, invite everybody up to Waterdown. It's called the True North Gallery in Waterdown. We have amazing art by, you know, everybody from Joni Mitchell to Bob Dylan to local artists like Martin Tielli and Terry Watkinson. And I have these little flyer invitations here for anybody who wants the address. Here, you guys. Cool. I think you need some really cool art for your office walls there.
Yeah,
and anybody who wants to take it. So make a creative space in your office, and that'll attract and retain staff.
Does anyone else want to speak to that question before we move on the panel? Jen, Juan?
Just a quick, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for us broadcasters and those major corporations that aren't as flexible
to find that creative space, or we call it bench time, they can't adjust that well. So for us, we're nimble. We can navigate that. We can take advantage of it. We are.
Okay. And Jen, do you have anything to add?
Well, Dan, you and I have talked about all of this so many times. But, yeah, I think that, I think being flexible and just trying to figure out what the next way to move is really all you can do.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a... Sorry. Oh, I'll let the...
Hi.
Oh, we have...
Chris from Battle Goat. Listening to some of the stuff you guys are talking about, Juan in particular, thinking about the growth that you must have experienced from the very birth of your company to where you reach now, one of the challenges that I wonder a little bit about is as a company begins to spot additional needs that you don't already have the resource in-house of somebody who can accomplish a task, you're consistently faced with the balance of do we bring on new people or do we outsource? With the advantage of outsource, you can get it custom, hand off that task to somebody. But HR, it's yours. But hiring, it brings somebody inside, but that creates an HR need. And some of that, which parts of your company are you growing at what rate? Can you talk to some of the approaches that you can use to make some of those decisions?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sure we can all talk to that in terms of those growth decisions. They're very difficult. You know, the first 5, maybe even 7 years is just survival mode, but then you actually build something that you got to decide on how to sustain it and how to grow even more and not just fall apart. And one of those decisions is understanding what areas of the business am I skilled at, I can grow from, are more profitable, that we can actually tap into. So right now we've decided at Pipeline, we've decided we have our service division, which is key, sustaining wise. IP division, it's a group called Stingray. So we do develop our own content. These are resources we have within our studio that we can build upon and grow the company. We have software. We built tools, communication tools with our clients. It's such a massive process. We decided to build our own instead of going to a third party, and there are third party tools for this. But ultimately, we started testing if we could do something better, more specific to our process, and we did, and our clients actually no longer license those third-party tools. They, when they work with us, they use that. So that's grown on its own, but it was more of a testing thing. Now it's grown to become something we're going to commercialize at some point. And we have distribution, which is something that traditionally you hire someone to do, but that model is being disrupted a little bit as well, especially with how close the industry is right now and all these different vehicles to distribute content. We're doing it ourselves, and we've established hubs globally to do that. But even within the stuff that we're skilled at in production, we don't want to grow the company beyond 200 people here. We don't think that's responsible, really. And we've seen it in a few instances. In Toronto, I don't know if you heard about ARC and all that happened. These companies just go too fast, too big, they don't make the right decisions, and it falls apart, and that hurts the artists, the industry, our reputation globally. It's a mess. So in terms of responsibility, establishing third-party relations, supplier relations to us is key. It's a strategic business decision to do, and you build those suppliers. You build that relationship over the years, and it's a huge investment, so you want them to succeed. A great case study or story of that is Nelvana. I'll bring them up again. The industry would not be where it is today if they didn't take that kind of co-opetition type of approach to building key partners around that eventually became massive studios that would feed the engine, right? You can't do it all on your own. It should be a community effort, and I believe a lot in building those suppliers and understanding how to feed off of them. I hope that answers.
Jeff or Jennifer, do you want to add anything to
it's a great question, because you know, finding great people and either as an employee or a supplier, it's the biggest challenge, and losing people is one of the biggest disruptions for your business. But the way that I've sort of looked at, and we don't have as big an operation, we're like 10 people. We rely a lot on outside third-party suppliers for pretty much most of our anything technical solutions, because my philosophy is if it's already being built by a whole bunch of other people, then you know why build it again? That's great for somebody's IT business, but not for ours. So we would rather, you know, jump in with a bunch of other people and use a solution that's being built or already, you know, built. But the way I look at people is I don't like find a, you know, we need this individual person for our business because, you know, that's, you know, what all the consultants and research is saying, you need to add a social media person. I don't really do it that way. I just, I'm constantly scouting for good people. And when I find somebody and that everything is right and they're available, I bring them in and find a way to make that role fit in my company. And maybe it's a multitask, a number of different roles, but that's how I do it, is I look for people, and then I find a way to make the company maximize their contribution rather than like finding a specific role. Now, that might be something that a smaller business operates that wouldn't work for a larger business, certainly, but works for us.
Jen, do you have anything to add, Jen, just to...
Yeah, we're a very different size than, say, Juan's company. So it's really more based on people. It's a people kind of model, which is whatever it is that we've been asked to create or develop, then it's a project-by-project kind of basis. And I'm lucky to know a lot of very talented people and can bring them in on that kind of basis. Mm-hmm. Without, like, you know, worrying about the bricks and mortar side of things, which is one of those questions you begin to wonder when that should happen or not. But it's worked virtually, and partly because a lot of people that I know are want to also freelance and work that way. So they're often in Toronto, and I can work with them at a distance, or work with other companies at a distance, and it's worked well that way for me.
Okay. I think we have time for maybe one more question. Is that fair? Yes. Please, go ahead.
Yes. Mike Davey with Manor House Publishing, book publishing house, and I've also managed a small record label and managed bands and so on. My question, I guess, is mainly directed at Jeff. To you, Jeff. As you know, in the vinyl age, it was very difficult for bands to get signed and, you know, large, there were very few labels. Basically, the industry was run that way. Then we hit the digital age. The upside was virtually anybody could have their own independent labels and so on. There was more music getting recorded. The downside, of course, is everything. The market is completely saturated. And the other big impediment that I was constantly grappling with is the ability of people to download just about anything they want for free. So given this current climate, how do you go about, you know, making money in the digital age? How do you position your artists? What kind of networks do you employ to basically extract money from this system, so to speak?
Sure. Well, tell me your name and the name of your label.
It's the same, Mike Davey. My record label is Rockport Records International Corporation.
Okay. Mike, yeah, so... I guess our strategy is to sign established artists. So given the ease at which people can create and distribute music now, there's just so much coming through that trying to break an emerging artist is becoming such a difficult task. We only sign maybe one emerging artist a year. Because of the high risk and the really almost insurmountable challenge of getting something happening because there's so much music being generated. So what we do is we sign established artists. I look for artists that, you know, have four or five records under their belt, have a tour and have an audience, and it's costs more. There's more of an investment required to establish a relationship with an established artist, but it's actually less risky. That's how we approach it these days. And our latest signings are artists like Michael K. Shammer, who's You know, got 7 or 8 albums out already and won number of Jazz Juno Awards. We just signed Crystal Shawanda, who's an artist. And we also stay in the niches, so like blues, jazz, singer-songwriters. These are ways that we have established relationships with, you know, radio promoters and publicists and media that we think we can actually get the impressions that we need in order to market the music.
All right, well, thank you, Jeff, and thank you all for hearing us. Before we end this panel, I know there's probably other questions that people are formulating still. Can each of you mention, I know your Twitter accounts are on the screen behind us here, but do you want to just mention where people can learn more about your respective companies and if they want to reach out, maybe even if there's a way to get in touch? Jen, do you want to?
Sure. You can just go to logcabinproductions.com and find my info there.
Okay.
Same here, pipelinestudios.com. There's links there to reach us directly.
Yeah, truenorthrecords.com. You can find a contact for me there. It's jeff@truenorthrecords.com if you want to reach me.
Great. I want to ask you all to join me in thanking our panelists again, Jennifer, Juan, Jeff. Thank you to the OMDC. Thank you to the Spice Factory. Thank you all for being here. Have some donuts. Mingle. My name is Vish. Have a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.